is the Bearcast, presented by Bird Cultchin Ford. Bird Cultchin Ford has been in Waco since 1936. Ford is the number one selling truck in Texas 43 years running. The Bearcast is also presented by WellMed Medical Management and USMD Health System Dallas. Here's Craig Smoke and Grayson Grundhaver.
And welcome in on this Tuesday, March the 5th, 2023, a brand new episode of the Bearcast. Craig Smoke here with you as always, joined by Grayson Grundhaver. We got Garrett Ross behind the scenes as well, and coming fresh off a fun and exciting and a big win for Baylor basketball last night against the Texas Longhorns in what is to be UT's final appearance as a conference opponent probably ever in men's basketball, although they could still meet in the Big 12 tournament and maybe in the NCAA tournament, but certainly at Foster Pavilion, the last meeting for Texas, the first and last meeting for Texas and Baylor that we could see for quite some time. But what a way to close that one out for the Baylor Bears. We'll talk about that. Also, big weekend for women's basketball, as well as both teams start to wind down conference play and get geared up for the postseason. Got a sprinkling of football, but we'll have much more football in store starting in a couple of weeks with spring football getting revved up. But I guess as we start to dive in here, Grayson, you made a visit to the Foster Pavilion. You've got to experience the new arena, and I guess let's start there before we actually dive into basketball matters, which are going to be the majority and the heart of this episode. But what was your time like seeing Baylor's brand new arena in action?
I mean, it was a really cool experience. I mean, just being in there, you kind of got that feel of just this program is taking that next step. You know what I mean? And it's something that we've talked about a lot. We know on the recruiting side of things, Baylor's taking a huge leap and gotten back to, you know, being able to go and recruit top five talents. I mean, we've seen that numerous times, being able to draft guys who are going to be taken in the lottery. All of that's really, really important, I think, to the health of the program. But then to see a facility like this, and to see an upgrade like this from the Farrell Center to the Foster Pavilion, it's great. And it's a heck of a venue. It was very loud. That was one of the more notable things. I've been to plenty of games in the Farrell Center, and at times it got really loud. But nothing like the Foster Pavilion. I mean, it's built for it. Now Baylor's just got to go out and take advantage of it. And they were able to do that against Kansas. And then, of course, we're going to talk about the game against Texas on Monday as well. But an electric environment and something really, really cool. And I think as things progress, it's going to become even better, you know, as they finish things out, complete the final things. Then also as, you know, fans get more accustomed to the new arena and just kind of the new path that Baylor basketball is on, I think it's going to be really fun to watch.
Yeah, Bill Self had great reviews of the building and said that it was, you know, along the lines of much louder. I mean, you can just tell watching broadcast how much louder it is inside that arena and the difference that it makes, a true home court advantage, which is what the whole idea behind the new arena was. I mean, there were also, of course, just the needs to upgrade facilities, and you do that and you keep those up to date. But just in terms of having a true home court advantage, I think it's safe to say that Baylor got its money's worth in that regard. And there's some other things, like you said, to fix up or tweak or change even. We'll see how that kind of all goes during the off season, but it has been what was advertised with a brand new, state-of-the-art, but home court that gives you that advantage that you were looking for. So look no further than the past week for Baylor basketball. Wins over Kansas and Texas, back-to-back at Foster Pavilion. And let's go back to the game you were at on Saturday, 82-74. Bears get the win over the Jayhawks. And, man, what a huge just victory, especially coming off of, you know, taking TCU down and just building this three-game win streak now that it's turned into, but all this coming off of a couple of losses and, you know, kind of resetting yourself, but they're on quite the run right now. And so to go down there and take down Kansas and get a win over a Jayhawks team that's been up and down this year, you took advantage of the fact that they have been up and down, but they got Hunter Dickinson back, and still you're able to go and get a big victory on Saturday.
Right. I mean, you know, it was still a game time decision for Kevin McCullough going into this game, and they do play him, and he had 20 points in this
McCullough,
game.
McCullough, not Dickinson, yeah.
And McCullough comes in, plays pretty well. I know I have a Kansas fan who's a friend of mine, and he was saying that he was just awful. I didn't see him being awful. He did miss a wide-open layup that kind of, I felt like, was the play that really just completely ended Kansas's hopes of coming back in this game. But he played well. He had 20 points. Hunter Dickinson is a problem. He had 20 points as well. But the crazy part is, you know, through the first half and then the beginning of the second half, I think Kansas was shooting 70% from the field. It was crazy. I mean, they were getting layups. They weren't really hitting threes necessarily, but they were getting pretty much everything they wanted at the rim. And then things changed. Baylor was able to kind of tighten up on defense. Kansas really struggled to knock down jump shots. And Kansas's biggest problem, their lack of depth, it really cost them. Furphy was really bad in this game, and when he's playing really bad, they just don't have a lot of options, and Baylor took advantage of that. Ray J. Dennis was phenomenal. This was one of those games where you saw the first half of Ray J., and you said, hey, man, you need to shoot the ball a little bit more. You need to find your shot. I know you got 5 or 6 assists at halftime, but you gotta score the basketball for this team to really reach where they need to go. And then he ends up with 19 points, 10 assists. He was awesome in this game, 7 of 8 from the floor. He was terrific, and really they had a balanced effort. Jaden Nunn was really good. Yves Misi really just, I mean, first play of the game, dunks all over KJ Adams, and he was just a monster the entire game. Just what he can do, catching the ball at the high post and then just taking a guy like Hunter Dickinson off the dribble to the rim and scoring, it's really impressive. And so, yeah, I mean, great effort. I felt like their defense really picked it up late in this game, and the offense just kept humming. I mean, 82 points on Kansas, that's a big deal.
Yeah, it was. So a huge win for the men on Saturday, and getting the second straight victory in Big 12 play after having beaten TCU earlier. And just kind of, I guess, because of the quick turnaround, kind of glossing over that and heading on into these past two matchups. But you had two wins last week. Anything on TCU that you really want to get into all that much?
I mean, getting a road win, which has been really tough for Baylor, is something huge for them. They played really physical, were really able to shut down TCU's top scorers, and that was really the biggest deal in the entire game. And finding a way to win on the road for Baylor is going to be really important as we get further into March, because you're going to be playing all these neutral site games. They got to be better on the road because they've just been okay. Now, that is life in the Big 12, though, I will say.
Yeah, so getting a big win in Fort Worth, turn around and you beat Kansas at home and in front of the Foster Pavilion faithful, and then turn right around a couple days later, the big Monday turnaround. And last night, Monday night, it was 93-85 Bears over the Longhorns. As I mentioned at the top, the Longhorns are probably going to be back at Foster Pavilion. I think basketball is a much different story than football. I mean, as far as travel and finding good games and good competition, it's just going to be kind of dumb if they don't play semi-regularly in basketball. I think it just makes sense to. Whereas in football, you really don't know beyond this year when the two programs might play again. But they'll certainly run into each other on the hard court at some juncture, whether it's as a non-conference game or in the NCAA tournament, but the odds much greater. We'll see a rematch sooner rather than later there. We could see it in the Big 12 tournament. We could see it in this year's NCAA tournament. They could play twice more for all we know, but the Foster Pavilion debut was a one-night-only affair, and man, it did not get off to what was looking like a very good start, as Max Asemus was just on fire for Texas. He got off to a fantastic start, and they were really just kind of dunking on the Bears early on. I mean, dunking them under the water, and you're like, gosh, are they going to, you know, give the Bears a chance to breathe here? But, man, what a huge night for Jalen Bridges. And he was fantastic, hitting a bunch of big shots and, you know, some deficiencies for the team defensively. I know there was some hand-wringing over their defensive efforts. Some of that was just like shots being made too. Like, you just give credit to Hunter, to Asemus for making buckets. But there was some defensive effort that you wish was a little bit better, certainly. But really in the second half, able to get to the free throw line. I know that was a point of contention for Texas, some Texas fans, was the number of free throws Baylor shot. But, man, they chipped away and able to make a run there and grab the lead and hold on to the lead subsequently. And which, what a huge victory, outscoring Texas 53-37. 53-37 in the second half. So a 16-point swing after being down 8 at halftime. Huge second half for Scott Drew and the Bears. You've got a huge night from Bridges, as I mentioned. 32 points, 10 of 13 from the charity stripe, 6 of 7 from 3, though. I mean, that was the huge number. The free throws obviously came to matter a great deal in the second half, but, man, 6 of 7 from 3 was absolutely massive, and others pouring in as well. Walter, Dennis in double figures. Ojiwuna in double figures as well, 10 points for him. He had some big buckets along the way. So, man, what a win. It looked like it was going to be a bad night at the Foster and a bad way to close out this inaugural season, and instead it turned into a terrific come-from-behind victory and win number 3 in a row. So now just one more remaining against Texas Tech coming up. But, man, nice way to end this chapter, if this is the end of the Big 12 chapter between Texas and Baylor.
It definitely is. And I mean, it's really weird because the game in Austin started this same way, where Texas was just hitting everything and you're just wondering, okay, is Baylor going to be able to fight back? They did in that game. Obviously, they lost on a buzzer beater in Austin. But then in this one, you know, it was really interesting because I think a really good team, we would have seen the first half be much closer to what Houston did to Baylor at the Foster Pavilion. That's how bad Baylor was playing defensively. And I know guys were hitting shots, but the fact of the matter is, if Max Abesmith has, you know, more than two or three open, wide open looks and a half, that's a problem. And he probably had 6 or 7. And that's just not going to work. I know Tyrese Hunter hit a couple threes early in the game and then got completely cold. Baylor didn't even, you know, worry about him at all on the offensive end. They put all their focus on Abesmith. And then Caden Shedrick had a nice start to the game as well, and they were able to kind of reel him in as well, Baylor was. And so I think in general, though, if you watch the first half versus the second half, the activity on defense was just completely flipped. Baylor was much more active in their zone. They even put in a little bit of man at times, but the man defense just continues to be terrible. So they had to go back to the zone, but they were doing a much better job of getting up, pressuring the Texas guards, and then making sure that they were kind of playing off Hunter and making sure that Abesmith wasn't getting open looks. I mean, they really shut down Abesmith late in the game. He was a machine through about, you know, the first half and then half of the second half. He just kept scoring and kept them in it. But then finally they were able to contain him a little bit. A great effort by Baylor. I felt like, you know, Jalen Bridges, we're going to talk about the 32 points, but the fact of the matter is what he did in the first half was the only reason Baylor was in this game going into the second half. He hit a bunch of threes late, just kept answering every time Texas scored. It was phenomenal. You mentioned Josh O. It was key for him to have 10 points and 4 rebounds in this game because Yves Misi had one of his, you know, weaker performances that we've seen in a little while. So credit to Josh O. He had a really, really nice performance. And then, of course, Ray J. Dennis, another really good one. Jacoby Walter as well got to the free throw line 12 times. So in general, the physicality, the level of play recognition on the defensive side took a level up, and the offense just kept humming. I mean, 40 points in the first half and then 53 in the second half. They're just so explosive at times on the offensive end. It's just the defense. That's, you know, really what it's going to come down to. And then, of course, the turnovers, which were at times a problem in this game for the Bears.
Yeah, one of the Baylor SIDs, Baylor's defense held Texas to one field goal over the final 13 minutes, which is a pretty interesting stat. And then mentioned that there were some undefended buckets in the final 40 that take that away a little bit. But yeah, one true, I guess, field goal in the final 13 minutes. So definitely ratcheted up the defense. I know Rodney Terry, man, he is just doing his best to be as unlikable as possible, man. He really is just an unlikable guy based on the last couple of times I've even had to discuss him, which, you know, I think I had a pretty high opinion of him originally, and just this year, for whatever reason, he's just been a whiner about some things. And last night, whining, complaining, whatever you want to define it as, in the post game about the number of free throws. So that was just something that I noticed and just kind of shook my head at, but it's whatever.
But if you watch that game, you understand why Baylor went to the free throw line so much more. One team was perfectly fine settling for three-point shots while the other team kept attacking the basket. I mean, it was very clear. Baylor said at halftime, hey, you know what? We're going to attack, we're going to get to the rim, and we're going to force the Texas players to have to guard without fouling, and they couldn't do it. And I know you're going to look at the numbers and say, oh, 42 to 21 free throw-wise, and I understand that's a huge disparity, but if you watch the game, Texas was shooting a bunch of jump shots, a bunch of three-pointers, while Baylor was really actively trying to get to the rim. I mean, that was just simply the difference in this game, and once Texas went cold from three, this game was over. I mean, it was an absolute wrap.
Yeah, so I want to make mention of that because it was just, I think, in poor taste, and not going to miss Rodney Terry if that's the last time they interact. Nothing against the guy, like I said personally, but he's just, this year has just been, he's very unlikable the times that I've been exposed to him.
The UCF game was bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what started the bad taste in some people's mouths, and then, you know, just bringing it all back around, because I don't know how much I'll talk about him really outside of just the previews for what's, you know, upcoming. But yeah, that was definitely something from last night's post game. And I was just like, okay, all right, well, and you laid it out. I mean, it wasn't a matter of just going to the rim and getting hacked and nobody's blowing a whistle or anything along those lines. But that, I guess, be getting a little bit too deep for Rodney Terry to explain. So Baylor gets the win, and 93-85, your final from Foster Pavilion. So the Bears now 22-8. On the year, Texas moves to 19-11, but Baylor 11-6 in conference play. Texas now 8-9, and you've got Houston on top of the standings at 13-3. Iowa State there at 12-4, and then Baylor at 11-6. Can't win the Big 12 regular season at this point. Not enough time or events will occur for that to happen, but we'll be right there in third place. Got a two-game lead over Texas Tech, who they'll go play in Lubbock coming up here shortly. But they should finish third in the Big 12, and the regular season, that is, and that means a number three seed in the postseason tournament for the conference, and we'll see ultimately some time to figure out still where they fit in the big picture, but big to position yourself there at third, and have a little bit of cushion there with Texas Tech.
Yeah, I'm not sure how the tiebreakers work, because right now BYU's at 9-7, Kansas is at 9-7, and Tech's at 9-7. So in theory, all three of those teams could finish at 11-7, and Baylor could finish at 11-7. So I think it's just a matter of, you know, how does this work out tiebreaker-wise? You obviously want to be a top four seed, because if you get a top four seed, you get the double bye in this new Big 12 tournament. Kansas has to go to Houston, so I have a pretty good feeling they're not going to finish 11-7, so not too worried there. But Tech, they get Oklahoma State, and then they have the game against Baylor. So I feel like that game, you know, could be the determining factor in whether Baylor gets the three seed or not. Again, not sure exactly how all the tiebreakers work. And then BYU could, of course, finish 11-7 as well. So still a lot to figure out, I think. But BYU's got to go to Iowa State, so they're probably going to lose that game. So either way, I feel good about Baylor getting a top four seed, but I'm not sure if the three seed is completely locked up quite yet.
Yeah, I don't think it's completely locked up, but, I mean, they've got one game to play, so they got a two-game lead. You play one of the teams behind you, so they position themselves about as good as they can going into having one game left. Certainly, I guess, you know, some other things can occur to where there's a tiebreaker scenario, but Texas Tech's going to win their game later on tonight. They play Oklahoma State, who, whatever. It's in Stillwater. Maybe some fun happens and you go ahead and eliminate Tech from having a chance at the third seed. But more than likely, they're going to win that game. Cincinnati's at Oklahoma, and then Kansas State at Kansas as far as the games tonight go. So Kansas at 9-7, you split with them. If they could lose, that'd be great because you'd knock them out of the way. So, yeah, still some things to figure out. But if Tech or Kansas lose tonight, then Baylor's effectively only got BYU, and they split with them, right? Yep. So that would be...
And BYU still got to go to Iowa State this week.
Yeah.
Which is going to be tough, especially because they beat Iowa State earlier this year. So, you know, there's going to be some payback on the mind of the Cyclones, who are a very good team.
Yeah, BYU's playing well. They've won a couple in a row. So they could, in theory, go win both their games. But, yeah, you're looking at a situation where you're feeling pretty good about where you are and the odds of getting a first round bye in the Big 12 tournament, which would be absolutely huge to not have to worry about playing that extra game. So, yeah, now sit back and watch for a couple days. And then coming up this weekend, it's Texas Tech in Lubbock, Grant McCaslin versus Scott Drew, and ought to be a heck of a matchup.
Yeah, it absolutely will be. I think that's going to be a really tough one. Obviously, it's tough to play in Lubbock, but Tech really has just been kind of up and down all year. I'm not really sure how good they are. They had the best schedule in my eyes in the Big 12 as far as easiest. I don't feel like they... I mean, they were challenged, obviously. You always are in the Big 12, but I felt like their schedule laid out really well for them. And kudos to them. I mean, they've taken advantage of it. And it looks like they're probably going to be a top 6-7 seed in the tournament. So it's going to be another tough one for the Bears in my eyes. And one that I think a lot of people predicted Baylor would probably lose, you know, in this final four-game stretch. That was kind of the one that you kind of looked at as, ooh, that's going to be tough. But I think if Baylor wants to be the team that, you know, makes a run in March, potentially gets a 2 seed, this game's really important for the Bears. And I mean, looking at bracket matrix, which kind of takes into account all the sites as far as predicting, you know, what the tournament's going to look like, Baylor's the top 3 seed right now. They're right behind Iowa State, Marquette, North Carolina, and Arizona, who are all on the 2 seed line. And Baylor's on the 3 seed line right there with Kansas, Duke, and Creighton. So, again, if Baylor comes out, they beat Texas Tech, and then they maybe win a game or two in the Big 12 tournament, they could be looking at a 2 seed, which I don't think a lot of us thought was, you know, super realistic a month ago.
No, not with the kind of ups and downs that they were playing with and showing. So, to be in this position is great. 3 wins in a row. Possibility you'll get 4 if they can beat Tech, then man, what a finish to the season that would be. But obviously easier said than done going out to Lubbock and getting the job done there. But man, a lot of fun last night, and what a finale for Jalen Bridges. I kind of get annoyed, and it's a very small complaint, but still here in West Virginia transfer at this point, it's like he's finishing his second full season in Waco. So I know that's a very minor gripe, but he's very much a Bear. Like 2 full seasons under your belt, I don't really think of you as the West Virginia transfer all that much anymore. But what a 2-year run for him that still has some time to go, obviously. But man, what a finale at home in front of a raucous home crowd. And yeah, that was some special stuff there, his performance and what that was able to help them do in that comeback last night to beat the Longhorns.
Tough shots, too, off the dribble. He was just locked in. And, I mean, he's shooting over 40% from the three-point line. And I'm not sure that many people kind of realize that because the headline is Jacoby Walter shooting and, you know, sometimes Ray J. Dennis and Yves Misi and these young guys. But I mean, Jalen Bridges has been so important for this team. Such a good rebounder, such a good defender. And when he gets hot like this, Baylor is really, really tough to beat. So, yeah, I mean, kudos to him. He continues to play really, really good basketball, and they're going to need him as March kind of rolls around. He's probably him and Ray J. Dennis, I think, are two guys that are probably the most important to how far this team is going to go. Dennis with the turnovers and just kind of leading this team, and then Bridges as a guy who defensively has to take on a large workload while shooting the ball really well.
Yep, so there you go. Texas Tech coming up this weekend in Lubbock, and that will close down the regular season, so we'll see as far as seeding goes. But right now, sitting there with a bye, but again, need to see how some other results play out before officially knowing whether the Bears will be able to have one less game to worry about up in Kansas City. But put themselves in a really nice position and got just a feel-good win. Anytime you beat Texas, you beat Texas Tech, you beat TCU, like those are the pretty much the usuals. Anytime you beat them, you feel pretty good, but especially given the background and the SEC move and just, you know, the uncertainty of what this rivalry will look like on the hard court moving forward. But again, I'll maintain, I think that they'll figure out some ways to play somewhat. I think Texas, if they're smart in basketball, is going to play everybody still, like rotate them, but still stay in state. You don't want to have to go farther than you need to play quality competition. So that just makes some sense there. Meanwhile, on the women's side of things, the Baylor women with a nice hot streak to end the season, 5 straight wins for them to wrap up the regular season. And this last time we saw them out there just a couple of days ago, this past weekend wrapping up their regular season run, it was a 67-45 dominant win over the Oklahoma State Cowgirls to give Nikki Collin and company, their fifth straight win as Asia Blackwell led the team with 20 points and 18 rebounds. What an effort from her. The double-double for Blackwell in the 21-point blowout victory, but beating Cincinnati on the road the Tuesday prior, a 2-0 week, and that followed wins over Tech and Kansas at home and then a road trip to West Virginia, so they went two wins at home, two wins on the road, and then back at home and blowing out Oklahoma State. So a five-game win streak puts them at 23-6 overall and has them squarely at fourth in the Big 12 women's standings, fifth, behind Oklahoma, Texas, K-State, and then they're tied there with Iowa State and West Virginia at 12-6. But what a little run for Nikki Collin and company. So right now they are sitting at fifth. Haven't seen the expectations for them. Haven't really delved too into bracketology and things like that. But definitely ending things on a hot streak as far as the regular season goes.
Right, and we talked about this, I think, the past couple weeks, just looking at the way their schedule laid out after that Texas Tech game, it felt like they could go on a little bit of a run. And getting past the Kansas and West Virginia game were key because Cincinnati and Oklahoma State, we knew they're pretty bad. I mean, they're both below 500 on the season, and Baylor took advantage of it. They came out, they got the wins that they needed, five wins in a row going into the Big 12 tournament. I actually think getting the five seed is going to be good for them. The reason for it is they'll get to play on the neutral surface one time before having to play Iowa State. If they get past Houston and Texas Tech, two teams that they're 3-0 against this year, who they've clobbered all three times they've played them, I feel good about Baylor getting past that matchup and then getting an opportunity to play Iowa State in that second round, because that's who they'd have to face. I believe these games start this week on, when do they start, Craig? Tuesday or Wednesday? Something sure, like that. But yeah, they're coming up soon. And so if Baylor wins their first game, which will be against, again, Houston or Texas Tech, then they'll play Iowa State in the next round. And then if they win that game, they'll likely have to play Oklahoma, who is the number one seed. But either way, it's a good way for this team to finish out the season. They're playing really good basketball. The question is, are they playing really good because of the competition that they're playing? Or have they turned the corner again and are starting to look more like the team that we saw at the beginning of the year that started so hot?
Yeah, so they'll play on Friday at 11 a.m. on ESPN+. So go ahead and put that in your calendar. They'll play the winner of Houston and Texas Tech. And so that's what they're looking at coming up on Friday. Houston and Tech will play Thursday night. And then off to the Bears. And then, as you kind of laid out there, you can beat Houston or Tech, which is the 12-13 battle. And then you'd face Iowa State in the quarterfinals. And then the favorite to face in the semis would be Oklahoma, who's the number one overall seed. They'll have to, as they get the double bye, I guess, if you will. Not, I guess technically it is, because they don't have to play the playing game, obviously. So they have that one, but then they also have the regular bye for being the number one seed. So they are waiting the winner of TCU and Oklahoma State, and then they would take on Baylor's side of the bracket before heading into the championship round. So, yeah, awaiting the winner of Houston Tech, then facing off if you can win that one against Iowa State, and then we can kind of go from there. But it would be Oklahoma most likely after that. And then just simply getting into the championship game at that point, which would feature any number of Texas, who's the number two seed. They'd be the favorite from the other side of the bracket. You got K-State as well, who, man, really fell off there towards the end. We're sitting there at the top of the standings, and then by the end of it, they're the number three seed. So that's another potential opponent, but we can cross that bridge, or they can cross that bridge when they get there, because you got to win a couple of games to even get to that point.
Definitely, and currently Baylor is a five seed projections-wise. I think they're probably going to have to win, obviously, the first round game against whoever they play against, and in that second round, they're probably going to have to beat Iowa State if they want to jump up a seed line, or at least have the chance to jump up a seed line. You would think winning seven in a row before dropping one to a team like Oklahoma would probably be enough to get the job done, but we'll see. The bottom of the Big 12 doesn't really do you many favors on the women's side.
Yeah, last loss came on February the 14th on Valentine's Day against Oklahoma, who's now, as we mentioned, the number two seed in the tournament, or number one seed in the tournament. Is it one or two?
They're the one seed.
The one seed, yeah. The one. Just getting them in Texas confused. But the number one seed in the tournament was back on Valentine's Day when you last lost. So five wins since then, and yeah, six of your last seven and seven of your last nine, and you can go on that way. But it's been a good month of February for Nikki Collin and the Baylor women's team. So we will see in contributions when you look at, you know, who's the leading scorer, who's the leading assists or what have you, even rebounds. It's just a different trio seemingly every single night. So getting contributions from all over, and hopefully that all can come together at the right time for them to go on a bit of a run. But we'll see how they position themselves with the conference tournament beginning this weekend, and should be a lot of fun. Ready at this point to get into this new phase. The regular season's been a lot of laughs and a lot of good times and some down times too, but definitely looking forward to some postseason knockout action. So we will see on Friday at 11 a.m. against either Houston or Texas Tech what they have in store. So there you go with some hoops and where we sit right now. But it is very much March now at this point, and so it's time for the madness to begin, and it is all set to here in the coming days. Meanwhile, in football, still have not finalized the staff. Dave Aranda and company awaiting the hire of a defensive line coach. There was some reporting on the top candidate for that, but I guess still going through some paperwork or some final whatever T's needing crossed and I's needing dotted and whatnot. But that's kind of, I guess, the big missing piece at this point that we're all awaiting, is just the final announcement on your new defensive line coach. And then here we have spring ball in like 10 days. So that is right around the corner. And man, here comes football, but I'm glad to see it.
Yeah, and I mean, just to kind of give an update, I still believe that Enoki Brechterfield will be the defensive line coach. I still have not heard anything that tells me that he won't be, but obviously it has been more of a process than I think anyone could have anticipated once that news kind of dropped that he was the guy, he was the candidate. San Diego State even hired a new defensive line coach. It seemed like all the writing was on the wall, but nothing official yet. So we're still waiting to kind of see on that. I again, everything that I've heard, I still believe that things are progressing and that he will be named the new defensive line coach for Baylor for this 2024 season. Other stuff, I guess, you know, spring ball's coming up soon. I know we'll talk about that probably next week, kind of getting into what we expect to see there. And maybe the week after, we'll kind of see how that kind of plays out.
Yeah.
But yeah, outside of that, official visits on the recruiting side, those are starting to get scheduled. Baylor's going to have one official visit in the spring, probably in late April is my expectation there. And then they're going to have their usual three official visits in June, the 7th, the 14th, and the 21st. That's basically how they've done it every year since Dave Aranda has been at Baylor. So things are getting scheduled. I would say it's a very encouraging group of visitors. We'll probably get into this more when that first date comes around, but just kind of wanted to give an update there that they're starting to schedule visits. Already have about 20 names of guys who are going to be visiting. The commits all have their official visits scheduled, and then a bunch of guys who aren't quite committed or haven't made a decision yet as well. Some pretty intriguing names, which I'm sure we'll talk about at a later date, but those dates are scheduled. Outside of that, visits are happening now. Unofficial visits are starting up in this month of March, and also camp. So you're going to get more news and notes. I'll have a camp this weekend, which we'll talk about next Tuesday, the Under Armour camp there in Dallas. Outside of that, 2026 quarterback prospect Quinn Murphy is on campus today. I think that's a pretty big one. He's going to be a consensus high three-star, low four-star guy. A really, really good offer list, really great relationship with the Baylor staff, and he was Jake Spavital's first quarterback offer in the 2026 class as well. He'll be on campus a little bit later today. So that's just kind of one little nugget on unofficial visits, but those are going to start to ramp up this week. And of course, if you aren't on the premium side, get on the premium side of Sikkim 365 because I'll have all kinds of news and notes on the recruiting side of things coming up. Outside of that, it's just weightlifting, football school, things that are kind of normal right now until we get into spring ball, which, like you said, March 19th is the start date.
Yeah, just a couple of weeks away, and so this will probably be one of the shorter episodes, really. I haven't looked at the mailbag, so maybe there's like gargantuanly long, you know, question to answer. But in terms of just activity, this is probably the most lull of a week that we're going to find, I mean, between the convergence of football and basketball, because once spring football starts, there'll be plenty of, you know, interviews to – pour through and just sights and sounds and things to go through and just simply the storylines, Daquan Finn being at quarterback and things like that. We can start to discuss that in the next couple of weeks, but not quite there just yet. So really just basketball sort of last time in the spotlight, and then spring football will be here in a couple of weeks, and then it'll be a nice mix mash and hopefully one that'll last for a little while, which means that the men and the women are playing through the NCAA tournament and lengthening their season. So looking forward to getting more into football. But, yeah, just kind of awaiting really a D-line hire at this point, and that's the biggest focus, although we have a good idea, as you mentioned, of who that's going to be. Still a matter of having to finalize that hire, and as we've seen, that can take a little bit of time to work itself through the system. So there you go with that. Outside of that, some recruiting, as Grayson mentioned, and really that's best taken care of and followed up on the premium section over on Sikkim365.com, so you can check that out for football conversation and just back and forth with other fans and S-talking and, riling people up, and don't troll too much. We got enough people doing that already, but you can start to get into some football discussion once again as it ramps up, and I'm very much looking forward to that. Meanwhile, just touching briefly on the Diamond, Baylor softball now 11-3 after their efforts here this past week, getting wins in the Getterman the Baylor Invitational out at Getterman Stadium, a 3-0 week for them with the sweep of Morgan State, 2-0-4-1 in the doubleheader on Saturday, and then a 3-1 win on Sunday. So three straight wins over Morgan State this past weekend. That was after a pretty good showing in the Palm Springs Mary Nutter Classic the week prior, in which they got a bunch of nice wins over Notre Dame and UC Riverside and UCLA and Missouri, and both the Bruins and the Tigers were ranked in the top 20. So a nice little run so far for Baylor softball, who, again, finds itself at 11-3 here early on, and they will be going and turning right around to host Penn State coming up tomorrow at Getterman Stadium, and then starting this Friday, have some Big 12 action as Oklahoma State rolls into town. So definitely enjoying some time, or actually tonight I should mention, Sam Houston State, actually they'll be on the road, so didn't mean to skip over that. Tonight on Tuesday, as you listen to this, they will be traveling to Sam Houston, then they'll come back tomorrow and play Penn State at Getterman and then host Oklahoma State. So make sure I get that right. So five games in the works for this weekend, starting later on tonight against the Bearcats. And getting into the swing of things as far as Baylor softball goes. Meanwhile, Baylor baseball, what a rough start for Mitch Thompson and company. I mean, really could not have gotten off to a worse start, not just losing on the field, but losing losing players to injuries. A lot of bad injury luck early on for the Bears, and situation where I know we got our good buddy Levi, who, if you want baseball musings, you can check that out over on the website. But a really tough start for Mitch Thompson and company, and just trying to find some positives and able to start scrounging together some wins, Grayson, here. 4-7 now, and able to start packing some wins together. So turning the corner a little bit, I guess you could say, for Baylor baseball. Starting to get their wind underneath their wings a little bit here early on.
Two really good pitching performances, too, on the weekend, which was really encouraging. I mean, these guys need to just kind of gain confidence. I think that's simply what it is. You know, you got to learn how to win right at some point. And in those first two outings, I felt like the pitching was really good from starter to reliever. They pitched really well, and then that kind of allowed them to, I wouldn't say weather a storm, but it allowed them to kind of take their time before piling on the runs, which they were able to do in both of those first two games and obviously in the third game as well. This is just huge. It's confidence, right? It's trying to take that step from being a team that is competing against pretty good teams to being a team that actually can win those games. And they were able to get the job done this weekend with a sweep. It's huge for this program.
Yeah,
a
sweep over Oral Roberts, which I don't think I mentioned, but that's following a loss to Abilene Christian that really just had you about as down in the dumps as you could possibly be. They're sitting there with one win over Lamar and 1-7 entering this past weekend, and then able to turn around and get the sweep of ORU. So that was absolutely massive for Mitch Thompson and company. They're 4-7 now and able to put some runs on the board. 11 runs, 9 runs, 11 runs. You really needed that. And now tonight they turn right around and it gets real again. Number 17, Dallas Baptist, a team that I never talk about outside of baseball season, a school I never even utter outside of baseball season. I don't think I do, at least. It's, I feel like the only time is like deja vu is this time every year I suddenly start mentioning Dallas Baptist. But number 17, DBU, in town tonight for a midweek tilt. And then later on this weekend, starting on Friday, they'll travel to Houston and start Big 12 play against the Cougs, their new conference mates. So big weekend ahead, and you just hope that you don't get overwhelmed by it, and hopefully you've gained some confidence from the results this past weekend, but about to ramp up in a major way with DBU and the Cougs this week.
Yeah, DBU's 10-1, and they've already beaten Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Arizona, and Alabama this year. They have some marquee wins. They've piled on the runs on a lot of teams as well. That's going to be a very, very tough outing, but one that I think could give this team some confidence, especially coming off of a sweep of Oral Roberts. You kind of got to sit there and go, okay, you know, maybe they can gain some confidence here. Maybe they can just pull off a little bit of an upset, which honestly, when you beat a team midweek, it's not as big as of an upset as, you know, winning on the weekend, obviously. But a good opportunity here, I think, for them to make up some ground. And then this Houston game, you know, early in the season, Houston was looking pretty good, but they've kind of gone through a rough patch here. They've lost 4 of their last 5. So again, opportunities for Mitch Thompson and company to kind of get things going and trending in the right direction. We'll see if they can take advantage of it. We'll also see if this Oral Roberts sweep was a fluke, an anomaly, or something they can actually build off of.
Yes, we will. So big week for the Diamond Sports as they are fully into transitioning from non-con to conference play, getting revved up. So about to get a little hotter as far as sports calendar goes here in Waco. Now, meanwhile, that's about it notes-wise. For all I know, unless there's something else you got to pass along, we can go ahead and dive into the mailbag, which is pretty brief this week. Again, as I mentioned, it's kind of probably going to be like the outlier episode as far as just length and just number of topics, because we do have spring football starting up here pretty soon, and obviously March Madness is going to be a major thing to discuss. So let's go ahead and dive into the mailbag, we'll start off with Texas Turtle Girl. Why is this game against Texas so frustrating? This was posted before 10 o'clock last night, so I think this was before the end result had taken place. But Texas Turtle Girl did not follow up, although I would imagine pretty happy with the result and maybe even forgot that they had posted this question. But why was the Texas game so frustrating? Max Asemus had a big part of that frustration, I think, last night with his shot-making ability. But yeah, that was a frustrating start to the game, certainly, and just felt like you were about to watch a blowout, which was the absolute worst outcome that you could have seen when you know you're not likely to get many cracks at Texas moving forward. You're definitely not getting but maybe one more if it works out that way as far as conference opponents go. Maybe two, and that's unlikely. But yeah, it was frustrating to start for sure.
Right. The fear of getting swept by Texas in their last year in the Big 12 was definitely frustrating. The fact that Baylor came out and played very similar to how they played against Houston a week and a half ago, which was, again, super frustrating at the time. I think defensively, I think we've talked about this all year. You kind of are who you are at this point in the year. And Baylor defensively still has problems. Like that's just being realistic. They are going to have issues. They can't play man-to-man defense. They're going to have to run this zone defense. And at times, teams are going to be able to shoot the ball against that zone. And Texas started off finding the holes in the zone in the middle, and they were hitting threes. And it made it really frustrating because it felt like there was nothing Baylor could do about it. But on the flip side, Baylor just needed to play harder, play with more activity, and play with more physicality. And once they were able to do that, they were able to flip the script on this game. But I think that's what's so frustrating is just inconsistencies when it comes to effort, especially at times at the beginning of games. It's been a real problem for Baylor and something that you can't really have at this time in the season.
Yeah, that's something they've got to work on and clean up. And just, man, it's about being at your best now. I mean, you're about to enter the knockout phase here after Saturday. So you'll have a couple. You can lose 2 more games, in theory, before your season's over with. You can lose Saturday, and then you can lose in the Big 12 tournament. And then the next time you lose, it's over. So that's kind of what you're looking at now at this point. You got really two phases, although you got this one regular season game remaining. But, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how they play in the postseason. Doc Crow, first things first, though, beat Tech. That'd be a great way to close things out. Doc Crow with his gritty come-from-behind victory against Texas. If we beat Tech and win at least one game in the Big 12 tourney, does that solidify Baylor as a two seed during March Madness?
Oh, gosh. I think a lot of that depends on who you beat and then what do the teams in front of you do. Because right now, Baylor is the top three seed, according to Bracket Matrix. They're on the three seed line. They're going to have to catch teams like Iowa State, Marquette, North Carolina, Arizona. There's going to be conversations with Duke as well, especially because Duke beat Baylor. So kind of weighing and seeing how those unfold. Those are the teams that I think are in contention to be a two seed. Maybe Tennessee as well, even though they're starting to inch up to the one seed line. I think in order to fully solidify Baylor as a two seed, no matter what happens in front of them, I think they have to win out. They got to win the Big 12 championship to ensure that they get a two seed. I think if they beat Tech and they win one game in the conference tournament, I think their case is definitely there to be a two seed, but you definitely can't guarantee it when you look at all the teams that are kind of in front of them at this point that really you'd need to lose rather early in their conference tournament in order to catch them.
Doc Crow with his gritty come-from-behind victory against Texas. If we beat Tech and win at least one game in the Big 12 tourney, does that solidify? Did I just read that?
Yeah, that's the one.
We'll welcome a play as a freshman. Sorry about redoing that. Was not paying attention. But talking about safety Chris Wokuma from Arlington Bowie, who just signed with the Bears. Will he see time as a freshman?
I think he's going to redshirt, and I think he should redshirt. The thing of it is, though, he could be pretty valuable on special teams. He could find himself a role at safety, but in my eyes, I don't think that he's going to be. I think he's going to redshirt this year, which would be better for his development anyways if he's able to kind of take this year to learn, grow, develop, and then next year be more ready to play because he's definitely not going to start over Devin Bobby, I don't think, this year.
Will we see double Jenkins formations during the season? Obviously alluding to Caden Jenkins, who was a standout, one of the few for Baylor last year, and then his brother Cameron, who transfers in from UNLV this offseason. So will we see double Jenkins formations?
I think that they'll both be on the field. I mean, Caden's going to play pretty much every snap. I mean, except when he's getting rest at times during various possessions. He's going to be their starting cornerback. And then I think Cameron, it's hard to predict that he's going to start over the veterans that they have, but I do think he's going to push to be in the two deep and potentially play a big role this year, maybe behind Devin Bobby, or maybe even gets to play at field safety some behind Devin Lemire and maybe DJ Coleman as well. So we'll see. I do think you'll see them out there at some point, but I don't think they're both going to start, and that's mainly because I don't necessarily think Cameron's going to be the full-time starter at safety.
Useless Kim Degree, how impressed are you with the strength of these freshmen? 405 is heavy. Sheesh. So I have not spent a lot of time on Twitter for a long time now. I'm just not as into it as I used to be. And so I maybe I'll ramp it back up for spring ball. But I say that because I have not seen a lot of the strength and conditioning posts. So 405, does that ring a bell as exactly what's being talked about there?
Yeah, I posted the video of Jaden Porter, the true freshman from Lorena, bench pressing 405 pounds this past week. And then Chris Wokuma the very next day posted a video of him bench pressing 405 pounds. It's very impressive. I mean, I don't know how big Chris Wokuma is currently. I would have guessed that he's probably around like 195, 190. But I know that Jaden Porter is like 180, 185. So for him to be bench pressing 405 pounds is extremely impressive. I know you got all these Twitter trolls out there that are like, oh, but the coach is touching the bar. And I'm like, guys, that's more about safety than anything else. And if you want to say that that's helping him some, sure, whatever. Let's say he's bench pressing 385 by himself in an open gym. That's cool, but this is more about safety and pushing yourself, and that's a great PR, I think, for Jaden Porter as a true freshman. Same with Chris Wokuma. I mean, these guys have only been on campus for, what, 2.5 months, 3 months. I mean, it's really impressive the gains that they've been able to make.
Twitter has never been a bigger cesspool of just haters and losers and attention whores. I cannot stand it sometimes. you could post that a dog say to a little girl, like, well, a breed would have done better. This breed would have been better than that breed.
The form's
that,
off.
That Dalmatian can barely even, I mean, just so stupid. It's so stupid. But, that's mightily impressive that you've got young guys putting up that kind of weight. I certainly can't relate. And so, yeah, Chris Wokuma, saying his name a lot in this episode, hopefully saying his name for all the fun reasons moving forward for the next, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, whatever his career pans out to be, impactful-wise, then the more we talk about him, the better. But, yeah, that's certainly impressive to be throwing up some weight. Who else did you say? Was it
Chris Wokuma?
Was it just him?
And Jaden Porter.
And Jaden Porter, Jaden Porter, who be interesting to see where he sort of fits in with his wide receiver crew with Spavital, because Lord knows they can use a boost. And is he able to come in and make any kind of an impact early on? That's definitely one of the spring storylines that we'll discuss further as we start to wade into those waters here in the next couple of weeks. So thank you, Useless Kim Degree. Scotty B, the Baylor King, can you think of a more hated player in Big 12 men's basketball than Brock Cunningham from Texas? I'm sorry, but the dude should think about being a wrestler or football player because he is way too physical for a basketball player. Anyways, the comment by Rodney Terry on Baylor needed every call to win doesn't sit well with me. Rodney Terry is a classless dude and softer than jumbo-sized marshmallows for s'mores. So Scotty B doing his best Twitter impression, bringing the hate with Brock Cunningham. Except you've got an actual basis for your hatred. You're not just randomly spewing garbage behind an anonymous name, Scotty. So I think you have valid points here on both Brock Cunningham and Rodney Terry.
Yeah, I think the Brock Cunningham one, it's hard for me to say he's more hated than some of the better players in the Big 12. You know, he's kind of irrelevant to me as far as being an actual, you know, really good basketball player. They were showing a stat that he's going to pass A.J. Abrams for most wins in Texas basketball history, and I'm like, yeah, because he had the COVID year and all these other opportunities to play 2 more years than those guys. But he's nowhere near the player that A.J. Abrams or Connor Atchley were during their time at Texas. So that's why he's not really one of the most hated to me, because he's not very good. Like, he's just an okay basketball player at this point in his career. And now he's doing all these other things where you're just like, come on, man. You're running over people. You're shoving guys into the stands. I will say the call on Jacoby Walter last night, that was not a flagrant foul for anyone but Brock Cunningham. That was definitely a resume type flagrant foul, in my opinion.
Yeah, he's just he plays the role of the goon and, you know, the tough guy or whatever. And so that's always an annoying role for the other team whenever you're playing that type of a player, but especially somebody who, is not like always the best, you know, in terms of the actual game, but is more of just a pest, I guess you could say, in some ways. But yeah, definite unlikable figure in Big 12 basketball this year, but I don't know if he reaches the levels of actual hate of like Kevin McCullough when you think of like the Texas Tech fans and like hating him or whatever other examples you want to use. But he's somebody that can definitely get under your skin. And then Rodney Terry, it's not the first time he said something or even the second time he's acted. There's the whole gym run in. I know Ashley documented it, had a thread that he put up.
Yeah, and it's with just the women's basketball team.
The women's basketball run, and it's just like, dude. Anyways.
I think his comments were so ridiculous. And he's sitting there because he's trying to prop up his team. He's like, we've played this many quad one teams. I'm like, yeah, and how many of those have you lost? Like, you've lost almost all of them. And he's like, we're definitely a tournament team. That's fine. You are a tournament team. But to sit there and act like, oh, Baylor needs calls in order to beat us. Like, come on, man. I mean, they got out-physical the entire second half. Anyone with an eye saw it. And really, they just withered in that first half. They should have easily had a 15-20-point lead. They didn't. And because of that, they allowed Baylor to stay in the game and then eventually dominate in the second half. I just think it's ridiculous sometimes when you complain about calls, especially in a game that ended up being kind of lopsided by the end.
Yeah, there's ways to react to losses, and he's chosen a route a couple times this year that just really makes me think a little bit less of him. Not that he cares, not that Texas fans care, not that I care how they care, but just For me personally, just a little bit of shine wore off this season with the way he's acted, and last night was just like a punctuation point on it. So good luck to them the rest of the way. Maybe we're talking about another matchup in the Big 12 tournament or in the NCAA tournament. Wouldn't that be something? But as far as the last game that we know of that these two teams are going to play, Baylor with a resounding, thrilling, come-from-behind victory against the Longhorns at Foster Pavilion. So that'll close out the mailbag this week. And Grayson, anything before we get out of here?
No, nothing really to add. I just will say, if you're not a Sikkim 365 premium subscriber, please check it out. We have all kinds of content. Ashley and Kendall do a great job with basketball. We have all kinds of football and recruiting content as well from myself and the rest of the staff. I mean, we're just going to be trying to pump out content come spring ball. So it's going to be a really fun time. And it's one of my most fun times of the year. Tons of insider notes, tons of discussion, and just a lot more to actually see on the field, which will be nice.
Yeah, there will be a definite ramp up of news here in the next couple of weeks with spring ball and then March Madness. So very much looking forward to that. We'll see what news the next few days brings, but enjoy kind of the quiet too while you get an opportunity to, because Lord knows there's not a lot of weeks like this where it's just kind of like kind of calm. There's still, you know, some things that could be better, but pretty good week considering where we've been at other times this year to see both basketball teams surging the way that they are, baseball with a huge sweep, softball with some nice wins. So, yeah, pretty good all in all, and just more to come. So thank you for everybody that joined us this week, whether it's via your favorite podcast feed or via the Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365 YouTube page. And if you are on that YouTube page, whether watching us live where you can Tuesdays at 11:15 a.m. each week or after the fact, please hit that like and subscribe button. That does us a world of good, and we appreciate that support. And same goes for the 365 sports page where you can find us every weekday from 3 until 6, talking Baylor and Big 12 and all that's going on with college football for the most part, with a sprinkling of other topics as well. So that'll do it for Garrett Ross. Appreciate your time as always. And Grayson Grundhafer, I'm Craig Smoke. We'll talk to you next week. This has been the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com.